So far, we have talked basketball, the Bulls and their acquisition of Jabari Parker. A lot of this stuff is new to me because I've been in the woods for 5 days.
And you have returned.
I've returned in mostly one piece, a little scraped up, a little worse for wear, but had a lovely time up there and got pretty much lucky with the weather, except for the first night and the awful storms and some rain coming back yesterday, but all good. And the Cubs, just all of a sudden you blink, and the Cubs are 2.5 games up at the break because of the collapse of the Milwaukee Brewers. And
we'll get to that in a second.
Here the Cubs are, the best team in the National League, very, very quickly and very solidly the best team in the National League, with still a lot of headwinds. And it's been an uncomfortable first half for the most critical Cubs fans. This has been a season where it's been very difficult to make the most critical fans pleased in any way. Are you not pleased?
So going right to that Brewers collapse, of which they've lost 6 in a row, and some of them to the Pirates over this weekend. Saturday afternoon in a doubleheader, though, I think you saw, even if you were locked up in the North Woods of Wisconsin, Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco became only the third pair of teammates in Major League history to have back-to-back home runs in both games of a doubleheader. Marte and Polanco. Any guesses as to the other? Of course not, because it hasn't happened in 50 years. The last to accomplish this feat were Sal Bando and Reggie Jackson of the Oakland.
Wow.
The Oakland A's in 1968. The others would have been also Pirates, Frank Thomas, not that one, the other Frank Thomas, and Dick Groat in 1957. The other pairs of teammates to homer back to back in both games of a doubleheader. Frank Thomas and Dick Groat in 57, Sal Bando and Reggie Jackson of the A's in 1968.
One-time NL MVP Dick Groat.
I believe that's correct.
And a former Duke basketball star.
If I remember, I was looking up...
Also made picks for Terry.
I was looking up the other... Did he really? I was looking up the other Frank Thomas. Not a terrible baseball player.
Nope.
Fine. Decent ball player.
That's a different list, too, if you start looking at guys with exactly the same name. I know it's spelled a little differently, but like you have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the running back. Yeah, there's been, we could go down that road at some point, too. You have not been to the Audubon Zoo in New Orleans?
Not that I remember. I've been in a lot of places in New Orleans, none of them really all that, you know, cognitively.
I've been to the zoo a couple times.
I've wandered quite a bit in that town.
We all have. Yeah. But it is, it's a great property.
Is it downtown?
No, it's down near the Garden District.
Okay.
You can take the cable car down there.
I have taken the cable car.
You can get off the cable car there and go to the zoo. But it's a big sprawling property with a lot of open enclosures. The lowland gorillas, particularly, I was there for the feeding of the gorillas, where the zookeeper is throwing vegetables to the gorillas, who are making the most crazy, like Javier Baez plays.
Awesome.
An entire head of celery, just grabbing it out of the air and then eating it from the wrong end, you know, taking huge bites out of it, you know, raw egg, a whole eggplant, catching it with one hand. And then if a throw is bad, the gorilla will give a look to the zookeeper like, come on, a little help here. So they had an issue.
John Lackey.
And they do have, there are peacocks roaming around sort of out of the enclosures everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a couple of zoos like that. They just kind of wander.
A male jaguar managed to slip out of its habitat Saturday morning, killing 6 animals and injuring 3 others.
Oh, man.
The 3-year-old jaguar, Valerio, hello, I am Valerio, escaped around 7:20 a.m., and it took almost an hour before the zoo's veterinarian staff managed to sedate him and return him back to his quarters around 8:15. By the time he'd been recaptured, Valerio had killed 4 alpaca, 1 emu, and 1 fox. He also injured another alpaca and 2 foxes. It's far from clear how he managed to escape and why it took authorities so long to get him back into his enclosure. In a statement, the zoo said that initial inspections suggest the roof of the habitat was compromised. So the zoo remained closed Saturday, will reopen Sunday, but the jaguar exhibit will remain closed. Valerio is kept with another jaguar who's 21 years old. He said, in over a 100-year period, we've never had an incident like this, according to the president and CEO of the Audubon Nature Institute. They're going to launch an investigation to figure out what happened. But this isn't the first time a jaguar has escaped from this particular facility.
What?
In 2001, a jaguar cub named Moolock escaped its enclosure, but it took only 10 minutes for him to be brought down with a tranquilizer dart before he had a chance to hurt any other animals. The zoo immediately dismissed the idea of euthanizing Valerio because he didn't act out of the ordinary for a jaguar. He's doing what jaguars do. His behavior wasn't out of the ordinary, just a normal jaguar as far as we're concerned. It was most likely a territorial situation. He's been described as incredibly smart. His care staff described him as a big, lovable goofball.
That kills if you're in my area.
Look at that big, lovable goofball.
What a guy.
Just slaughtering animals.
You're dead.
Yep.
Zoozer. I feel like we're going to look back in like 10, 20 years or so and think about this zoo thing a little bit differently.
I agree.
You see Blackfin or stuff like that, and you're like, this is a little strange.
I agree. Or we will have
rescuing animals is one thing. Or, oh yeah, or we'll just be wiped off the face of the earth in 10, 20 years.
Nope. It's going to be an ironic twist.
We will be?
Correct. Where
it's
our
like a Simpsons episode.
Our alien enslavers will have
us. I, for one, embrace our new ant overlords. Did you notice, because there's two teams so far on this show that you and I have kind of wondered at from afar, you know, the Orioles being one.
Oh God, don't start.
Just kind of, nope, I'm not going there, not until the trade is actually made. The Orioles have been one. We've kind of been curious as to what the hell is the plan there, really? And now with LeBron going to the Western Conference, the Golden State Warriors being what they are, and the Houston Rockets reconstituting some, and curiously, in some cases, the Minnesota Timberwolves have been one that you and I have looked at kind of askance and wondered,
what are you doing?
What really is happening here? Story over the weekend that Jimmy Butler was offered a contract extension from the Minnesota Timberwolves. In a year where everybody's getting money. Zach LaVine's getting $78 million over 4 years, and Devin Booker gets himself $30 million per season. I mean, the contracts for some of the...
Jimmy's do the super-super, right?
Do the super-super, yes. Yep. And an impending free agent, you know, coming up real quickly. And you've got reports left and right and from Joe Cowley saying that Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler are all ready to team up and take some Eastern Conference team, the Knicks, the Nets, off to the promised land. Did you see what the contract they offered, the extension they offered was? 4 years, $100 million for Jimmy Butler in this NBA. In this offseason, where the money just keeps on, I understand that not enough teams have a lot of cash, you know, necessarily now.
Why would they think he's in any way incentivized to sign that?
Why would you even offer it? It's like a Supreme Court justice nominee. You can't offer this if somebody's going to turn it down. You have to get the yes from someone. You're spending political capital. It's
weird.
So strange.
You got to save face, right?
They even offered the thing.
With the fan base.
But how does it save face?
Yeah, but the fan base isn't dumb enough to think that there's any reality there.
The most easily explained thing about this contract is Jimmy Butler's never taking that. Fan base understands that. Any fan base understands that. It just seems
odd.
Given the money, given the money in this NBA, I think this is, and if they don't understand it on the face, then I think this is one of the most explainable situations in an offseason.
It's from Golf Week. For those hoping for a difficult Open Championship at Carnoustie, you could be in luck. This was written yesterday. Sunday, 4 days before the start of the tournament, the on-the-ground reports are about how firm the conditions are in Scotland. Incredibly firm. There were several massive drives in this week's Scottish Open. That's the lead-up event that many of the contenders play to get used to the conditions, the links courses, etc. And they're at Goulain. A 458-yard launch from Ricky Fowler.
I'm sorry, what?
You heard me right, 458. The courses are baked out. For those at Carnoustie early, the driving distances are similarly ridiculous. Brant Snedeker on 18 tweeted that he hit one 427.
What?
And he said guys would be hitting it in the burn in the front of the green. The burn is the little river. 450 plus. He said, Carnoustie's baked out. Greens are pure. Never seen an open this firm. Will be an awesome week if it stays like this. Patrick Harrington just played 18 at Carnoustie. Breeze down off the left. Hit it in the burn again. The one at the green, 457 yards away. He said the fairways are a tad fast. This is Dustin Johnson. On the 513-yard par 5, 14th, driver wedge, hit a drive into the burn, 473 yards.
That's an incredible amount of distance. Well, I can't even wrap my head around what that does to a tournament. If you're going to play that way for 4 days... And you're one club out and in? I mean, this is mind-boggling.
There is no rain expected. It hasn't rained for 8 weeks in Carnoustie. A bit of a heat wave. The fairways are, according to Steve DeMeglio, the fairways are brown, and he adds waggishly, a tad on the concrete side. Yes, I'd say.
Have you seen the odds for your home run derby? Occurring tonight?
The current odds?
Yes, your current odds.
Bring them.
Eno Saris of The Athletic put this together. He was trying to pick a favorite in the home run derby based on as much of the nerdery as he possibly could. At the Westgate Superbook, you can get Bryce Harper at 11-4. You can get Jesus Aguilar at 6-1. Max Muncy, Freddie Freeman, Kyle Schwarber, all of them at 6-1. Rhys Hoskins is 7-1. He of the Philadelphia Phillies. Javier Baez, 8-1. Alex Bregman is 8-1. He of the Houston Astros. By home run per plate appearance, he points out, though, Max Muncy at .08 is your top guy so far this season. Hmm. Aguilar, Schwarber, Harper, Baez, Bregman, Freeman, Hoskins, they all follow. Looking, however, at exit velocities and hard hit ball and launch angle, he's put it all together and looked at previous home run derby winners to try to find out what they did, what they looked like, what not only the derby, but their seasons looked like, and tried to find the guy who is most likely to win this thing based on those numbers. Any guesses as to who it might be, considering the launch angle? Bryce Harper's had kind of this weird season, but it's an exhibition. Javi Baez has
Schwarber?
A month of it. It's Max Muncy.
Wow. With his reshaped swing this year.
91 exit velocity, 91.2. The launch angle at 17. Max Muncy, he has as the guy. Now, our guy, Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus, ran different numbers through a similar scenario and came out with Max Muncy as well.
Wow.
So, scroll back up to the top of the article where Max Muncy is a 6-1 guy to win this thing. He's in that clump. Remember, Aguilar, Muncy, Freeman, Schwarber, they're all kind of like 6-1 sort of favorites.
Tells me the odds makers don't care much about the nerdery.
No, they don't. Or really the derby itself. Right. How many people are betting on the thing, I wonder. But Max
Muncy. Total
Muncy,
handle is not going
to
be
probably
quite
nothing
like
you really have
race.
To worry about. Not really. But Max Muncy could continue what's been an incredible first half to watch with some home run derby fireworks tonight.
Speaking of fireworks, some on the literal side here, and I have a new word that I've learned. We have been following the Kilauea volcano
as best we can,
and following the various things that it spews out, the various dangers, and we now have a new island that has been created just a few meters offshore, but lava that's still flowing has created an island off the coast of Hawaii. It appeared Thursday, just offshore from the northern edge, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The island's part of the lava flow that extends underwater away from the coastline, and underwater pressure has pushed the lava flow to the surface. This is very common. Do you know what this is called? There's a term for this, for a small lava island thrust to the surface and created this way.
No.
I do not.
No.
It is called a tumulus.
Of course it is.
T-U-M-U-L-U-S. It's called a tumulus, and which is also the same
tumulus
word.
Tumulus is the island. It is
the
not
island.
The process.
Correct. A tumulus is also a burial mound when you look it up.
Really?
A mound of stones over a grave, a mound of earth over a grave.
All right.
Also referred to as a tumulus, but it exists. They don't know how long it's going to be there because sometimes...
The island?
Yeah, because sometimes the island will erode away depending on its stability. So
do we know how big the island is? Are we talking, you know, like...
It is...
Like a Far Side island where there's just like the two cows standing on the island and one palm tree and that's it?
It is... 20 to 30 feet in diameter.
Yeah, okay, so it's the two cows and a palm tree.
Yes, that's
cool.
That is the size, the current.
It's a Gary Lawson Island.
Yes, it's the current.
Gary Larson.
Farside, yeah. That is, and members of Farside. That is the current size of the tumulus. So if it were to remain as an island, the question is, what is it going to be called? And according to the USGS, it is the naming of the island is the responsibility of the local community.
So there's no one on the island.
It doesn't, you don't have to like, nobody's going to plant a flag there. Like,
well, that's how it used to be done.
Well, should we do it? Should the Bernstein and McKnight show send a representative to claim the island?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Claim it for the show.
Send them executioner to claim it on our behalf. And we can form our own government.
Well, that's going to be looked down upon by a number of different local magistrates, I would imagine.
Well, our army will defeat their army because we have the executioner.
And the Second Amendment.
Yes, that's true. And now with my newfound shooting skills.
That's right. You've reinvigorated shooting skills.
Yes, I'm all set. But, the way these things have been going, though, when the public has been involved in naming something, like with the British boat that became Bodie McBoatface, my thought would be this is going to be Islandy McIslandface. Because it's going to be – once you put it on Twitter or once you get somebody involved, it never ends quite the way you think it might. But
Coccyx Island. That's what it'll be after today's show.
Maybe we should do this. Send Ray down there, plant a flag.
Definitely worth the budget. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I've mentioned a couple of times, and I think we've teased into it some and out of it some, but the signings of the offseason, Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker, the gathering of assets that the Bulls have put together has told me something I think they think about themselves. I think we've all kind of come to this realization over the past little bit, and it's not been a fun realization to get to, but it's one that might be important for future team building.
There you have it. We're going to talk about that. We also have another chance for you to win $1,000 in cash on the score coming up. We've got it all for you. 312-644-6767. If you want to join the conversation, Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment's brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies.
So I might be missing the forest for the trees. I might have my head in the wrong place. I might be staring into the clouds and trying to see shapes there that aren't there. You know, just kind of make something for myself out of this Bulls offseason. Because you've kind of seemingly, Dan, come around to understanding that it's okay that this gets thrown together and we'll see what happens when we roll it out there, right? I mean, I don't mean to mischaracterize how you feel about Jabari Parker getting onto this team and Zach LaVine signing his 4-year, $78 million contract.
Yeah, but they're not overcommitted to anybody and they have retained their flexibility. They're not locking any of this in. They're just in a position to do what they said they were going to do, and that is accrue assets.
And they are younger and they are, you know, somewhat more athletic. And Wendell Carter Jr. is impressed of many more in the summer league than I think some expected. I think with the contract, this is Zach LaVine, the offer that we all knew was coming at the end of the day. And, you know, reaching out to Jabari Parker and putting him on a prove-it deal because of a second-year option that the Bulls control, it's fine. You mentioned that they retain their flexibility, though. And I guess that's where my head has been from the get-go about this Bulls current rebuild. That in 2019, when you've got your Klay Thompson, you know, ready to go, or a number of free agents who could possibly come online there in that season, that you're going to get the one, right? You're going to get the guy. But in talking with Vincent Goodwill earlier this morning of NBC Chicago, and in talking with a number of people and seeing, you know, kind of I think it is now because of the way that they've kind of constructed some of these deals that they do have an option on Jabari Parker, that LaVine is kind of locked up, that there are safeguards, I guess, for lack of a better term, for when you don't get that guy. And I can't help but think, as I've seen the roster put together, that it's more and more an understanding, because we've taken shots at John Paxson and Gar Foreman in the past for maybe liking their own players a little bit too much, you know, maybe enjoying the roster that they have and trusting that the development's going to happen a little bit higher than others might see, that they've kept something available to themselves. Kevin Anderson, who does a great job of covering the cap, really, the NBA salary cap for NBC Sports Chicago, writes a couple of things here.
Okay.
And basically the boil down of it is that as the cap in 19 and 20 rises up to $109 million, right? The max salary is based on years of service. So that means your 10-year vet like Durant eligible for like 38.2, Klay Thompson 32, an 8-year guy. If the Bulls keep Parker, they enter free agency with about 4 mil next summer, right? Well short of the cap space you need for a player like Durant or Thompson. But that also includes cap holds on a number of different players. Like for Bobby Portis, it's 7.5, Cameron Payne, 9.8. So if the Bulls are in line to sign a star free agent like Thompson, he writes, all they'd need to do is rescind any qualifying offer to Payne or Portis and renounce them as free agents, just like they did with David Nwaba. This would effectively take the cap holds off the sheet, give them approximately 32 in cap space. It's exactly the salary a 7 to 9 year free agent like Klay Thompson would look for. In order to create enough cap space for Durant and the increased max slot, they need to waive and stretch a player like Felicio or incentivize a trade involving a player by attaching another asset in the deal like your future first round pick.
Just remind me of the timing though. Would they have to forfeit assets just for the possibility of being involved in the pursuit of these free agents, much like ahead of the LeBron summer when they moved Heinrich?
Clear decks.
They got rid of John Salmons. Remember, there was all this stuff going on. Or
it depends on the player's whim. LeBron wanted everybody to have the space already because of the moratorium.
Right.
In theory, let's say for sake of argument it was Durant and you had more gymnastics to do. As long as he agreed, like if the Bulls went to him and said, hey, as long as you agree and we have something here, then we've got all these moves basically lined up.
Well, that's what I mean. Ideally, you can get an agent to say, yes, do what you have to do.
Get it done.
They could still leave you high and dry because nothing is in ink. But I believe that if you arrange it properly, you don't have to do any of these things until the deal is all but done.
The other thing that's that's not being spoken about much, and when I had Casey on my show, not yesterday, but the Sunday before, he made it sound like a Bobby Portis extension is extremely likely to happen.
Yeah, it's been written a lot.
So that would be probably, 10, 11, 12
Called
million
11.
A year?
Yeah.
Something like that. So that's going to be signed before this season, before October 31st this year. So that's not a situation where it's bird rights and you can hold that off the cap till you sign a new guy. That's going to be there already.
Yeah, that's hard money.
Yeah.
Plus you just have the Felicio deal. Still there too.
So many bigs like that. That's why the Parker thing doesn't make sense. Even if you're thinking long term, let's say Jabari plays well and you want to re-sign him. If you're signing Portis to an extension, you have this Felicio contract. Robin Lopez will be off the books. You still have Markkanen. You still have Carter. You have too many big guys. And no matter
what, league is moving away. Look at what's happening to post players who are on the open market right now. Nobody wants them.
Well, that's too many big guys who aren't multiple enough. It's one thing to have a big guy who can.
Isn't Jahlil Okafor right now just an unrestricted total free agent with no offers?
Yeah.
Right.
But that's because he was also sucking on offense.
I know, and he's a loon, and there's all the other issues. But there was a list of names of bigs that are just unwanted.
You could look at just the NBA draft. Once you got past Wendell Jr., I'm trying to think of the next big that was drafted.
Was it the Celtic who didn't show up for his workout?
Yeah, it was Robert Williams. 27.
Yes.
So you went 20 picks. Now, mind you, it's also a function of who was in the draft, but that there's just no priority on it.
But that's also a reason why guys are declaring for the draft from certain positions and not from others.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all part of it. It goes hand in hand. So the Bulls are relatively flexible.
They're relatively flexible.
And they are relatively young.
But they're very 22, I think, just over 22 is the average age of the starters that they'll roll out there. I read that in, I think it was an Athletic piece.
Chris Dunn's going to be their oldest starter.
Wow.
And their only defender.
This is assuming Carter starts and not Lopez.
Yes, assuming Carter starts, your only proven NBA defender is Chris Dunn. And while I have every expectation, and so do a lot of people, that Carter Jr. can play himself some defense and be, if not a focal point, then definitely a sure thing on defense, somebody that can cover up for other mistakes. There's development that's going to be had here, and it's going to be seemingly all on the offensive side because I don't expect Zach LaVine or Jabari Parker to get themselves into that defensive rhythm, into that Carlos Boozer situation where you're moving, at least just moving your ass to the right place to understand that this is where I need to be. This is where my mass needs to be in order to
He didn't really do that. The narrative around Boozer and what was said by Thibodeau and others was defensive rebounding is a part of defense. Remember, they changed the definition. They just moved something into another bucket where they said that basically they said they looked at the number. They said, okay, he's a decent defensive rebounder. We're going to count that because the word defensive is in front of it. That counts as defense.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't necessarily guarding the guy as much as he was waiting for a shot to miss.
No, but he would hedge a little bit. He'd move himself out in front of.
He talked a lot.
He's very talkative.
He communicated
very loud.
Well.
He's very talkative.
He blamed himself. Well, he always looked unhappy
very
when his guy.
So.
Got to the rim.
A lot of clapping. A lot of the clapping, which makes it look good one way or another.
I should have guarded that guy.
Damn. Next time.
Get most of him.
Probably not next time.
Missed him. God, we'll get the next one. But he's that's what they always said about him. But sometimes a guy, that's why I asked the question of Jim Paschke that I did, because sometimes guys just aren't instinctive, or they just don't have the wherewithal. They don't stay low. They don't move. But you think somebody especially who's creative offensively and athletic enough offensively can be able to react as well as act. And I guess they say it's why, you know, a wide receiver who can't catch is often turned into a cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the NBA Finals this past season. When Steph Curry was healthy-ish, he could still play you some reasonable defense. There were times where he was, don't get me wrong, there were times where he was completely exposed to be the defender that a lot of people feared he is on a regular basis. But I maintain that he was able to do a decent enough job. And really, even in the conference finals against the Houston Rockets, there were times where he's able to show up and defend some. And then James Harden put him in a blender another time. So that's that. You find yourselves places and spaces to do it.
Sports Talk on the Score is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. We've got something very special happening today at 1 o'clock. It is going to be the reunion of the Heavy Fuel Crew.
Very cool.
Show that I used to drive around Rockford listening to when I was a listener, and also then when I would call in as a reporter on the Bears and the Bulls for my 5:30 hit, whatever it might be, and play sound, and occasionally he'll hang up on me because he didn't want to talk basketball. I've heard enough about pick and roll defense. But that was a formative and seminal Chicago radio show is going to be reunited today. We will do transition with them at 1 o'clock.
Have you seen, talked to Terry recently? How is the
texted?
Did we know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We saw him in here about like a month ago, something like that.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Good.
Look, his favorite thing in the summer is just watching his grandkids compete at their various sports, and he's had an opportunity to do that. You know, the book is out. He doesn't have to watch Bears football, and he's free. He said the greatest thing about
that's
retirement
the checklist.
Is not having to watch the Bears, right? If you want to watch us, the Bernstein and McKnight Show, you've got a couple chances coming up, because not only are we going to be at Gallagher Way.
Two or three of chances, right?
Correct. But on Friday, we're at Gallagher Way.
Right.
So we'll be broadcasting live from the plaza right there outside. You're free to come by, say hey, hang out. There might be a yoga class there on the grass.
Every morning I walk to the train and there's a yoga class going on out there.
I listened to a wonderful podcast on the drive, by the way, which we were headed up to Minnesota. The founder of Lululemon. This Canadian guy?
The weird dude?
Yeah.
The guy that really liked the fact that everything he had was see-through?
No, it wasn't
guy
that. No,
okay, the other guy.
He made the controversial comment about our clothes aren't for everyone, when apparently the Lululemon clothes were being used by some larger people as de facto Spanx, rather than buying them in the proper size.
Okay.
They're buying them several sizes too small to try to
as a function,
suck kind of, themselves okay. in, right. And then the fabric was pilling, and his response in a business call was, "It's people are buying them too small. We didn't know it was being used this way. Our clothes aren't for everyone," and people took it as fat shaming. But he leaned into a lot of that stuff and faced up to it and talked about what he meant, to talk about how he built the company.
And now he does a podcast?
No, he was a guest on the How I Built This podcast.
Oh.
And so I also listened with the CEO of Starbucks. It's incredible. The one thing you learn about entrepreneurship, how many times these fearless people get close to either losing everything,
yeah,
or how many times they actually lose everything. Like their house, their kids' college funds. I mean, people who are really passionate about building a business, how much risk they can incur, and I don't know how they ever sleep. I don't know who is built this way, but the only way to become a billionaire is to take unbelievable risks and go through absolute hell. Ugh. Is the lesson that you learn in some of this stuff. But I forgot how I got. Oh, the yoga.
It was the yoga thing.
He bet on yoga being a thing based on almost anecdotal evidence and what he described as just a gut feeling. He predicted the yoga boom.
What a crazy thing to have. Was he a yoga guy at all?
No. No, but his first.
So he just sees it and calls it coming up.
And he saw demographic trends. He actually looked at college women graduating college and moving to urban and suburban areas with an X amount of disposable income, and predicted the athletic wear boom, where it used to be you wore your worst clothes to the gym, and it stopped. That's because of his company and other and Athleta and then Nike and other this. But he got out of skate and surf and put it all. He bet everything on the yoga boom because he said this was not Gary Hoga boom. He didn't bet on him either. Yeah, good on him. Definitely. Also, I mentioned we're going to be at Gallagher Way on Friday. Next Monday, July 23rd, is that a week from today?
Yeah.
Okay, a week from today is going to be the Cubs On Deck Luncheon with Wilson Contreras and Mike Montgomery at the Budweiser Brick House Tavern. A couple of tickets left. I'm not sure if there's VIP stuff left, but I do think there are. Check it out. So I don't know, but I know they're going fast. It's presented by Xfinity and AZEK Building Products. Visit 670thescore.com/ondeck for information. And we've got a ton of giveaways. When we come back, we're going to give away $1,000 in cash with a text keyword. And also, between now and noon, in the next 80 minutes, we've got two pairs of passes to meet Joe Maddon following our July 24th live broadcast from our downtown Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage. This is a busy show. A lot of things happening for Bernstein and McKnight. We've talked a lot of Bulls. I want to get back to a question that I asked rhetorically, and I guess I should ask it directly. After the top of the hour, about where you are as a Cub fan as we hit the break, because they've answered a lot of questions. There are still a lot of open questions, but there's one I think that we need to get to answering after the top of the hour. But $1,000 could be yours next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Joe Maddon. And yeah, that's how you feel good. Last year, it was coming out of the break that they roared their way to the division title. Maybe they made their move just a little bit early, thanks to the Milwaukee Brewers stepping on their own dung for five
days. Six in a row. What a terrible, terrible series for them against the Pirates.
It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is candy. Text candy to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is candy to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. I've had my share of sweets. I overdid something about the Northwoods. We did a lot of Dairy Queen. I did way too much Dairy Queen. And I did cone dipped. I did peanut butter parfait. And then we went to Tremblay's, the fudge shop in downtown Hayward.
See, the problem with that place is you're in there and you go, well, I won't be back here for a while. So what I should do is buy 7 or 8 of these things. And that way, the next time I'm here, I'll be good to go. And then you buy the 7 or 8, and then you eat them in like 2.5 days, and then you're somehow back there again.
But there's the samples, and it's not just like tiny little bits. Nope. It's huge chunks.
I'll hack you off of.
Right, well, I tried this one. Well, I have to try the maple now. And if I've tried the peanut butter fudge, now, of course, I need to try the chocolate peanut butter fudge.
Meanwhile, you've tried all of them the last time you were in there.
Of course.
Every single one.
This one's got walnuts. I haven't tried this one yet.
Look, so Oreos in fudge. Right, so
You're grazing your way through there, and what they did was really smart. It used to be the smallest slab of fudge you can get was 1/2 pound, which is like this big because it's so dense.
Right.
But now they have fudge balls.
Really?
So it's perfect for the kids, too. So rather than have to get your kid 1/2 pound, you can just get 2 or 3 of these golf ball size fudge balls that are dipped in chocolate.
I was just going to say they roll them in
They're dipped in either white chocolate, dark chocolate, milk chocolate, with various all of sprinkles and things on the outside as well.
So you get yourself a 48 pack.
it's about the size of a donut hole, but it's a fudge ball. And there's just and then I'm walking outside. You're strolling through downtown Hayward. You went to Anglers. You got your big lunch. You got your fudge. You were headed to go go-karting. And I hear Dan. Okay, it's probably one of my camp friends, right?
So one of the parents, everybody's up there. That's
right, or
the weekend.
Somebody I know from Dan.
Or your kid, and he's taking up smoking during
the
break.
And it's Cameron Hughes.
What?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. I said, what are you doing here?
How?
I said, what the hell? You're from Napa? What are you doing in the middle of downtown Hayward?
Sampling the cranberries up in Hayward, right, making wine out of that now?
You're testing out wines here that you're going to buy? He goes, no. His daughter goes to the sister camp.
Of course. And
we're like, how did you find out? And then we're tracing it back and doing like his wife had a friend who knew somebody from Highland Park. He said the whole thing. It was just this bizarre thing. Like in the middle of downtown Hayward, there's Cameron Hughes just sitting there. Hey, how's it going? I'm like, what? It's one of those like a dream. It's like, yeah, my third grade teacher was there and then, you know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was walking down the street.
You're in a place that you know, but it's not that place.
Right.
And you know the entire way.
Exactly.
We were in my old home, but also there was a water park in my old house, which seemed completely normal at the time.
Yeah, it was just absolutely bizarre. It was sort of like, you have those moments with Dream Logic. That was the time in Rapid City, South Dakota, as we're looking for a place to drink around 11:30 at night, where and the city's empty, and it was like an old Western scene.
There were choices?
Or I'm walking, not on the sidewalk, but down the middle of the main street with Ralph Sampson. And at some point, I look over and I said, like, this is messed up. He's like, what? I said, I just didn't think at this stage of my life, at age 24 or whatever, I would find myself walking in the middle of the street in Rapid City, South Dakota with Ralph Sampson looking for a place to go drink.
And then he started doing Kurt Russell lines from Tombstone. Right. You tell him I'm coming.
You skin that smoke wagon.
With me.
I have two guns, one for each of you. But and then Ralph says something like, how do you think it feels for me? You think I'd be doing? He's like, I'm a national college player of the year.
This is a dream for you, Dan.
Rookie of the year.
For me, this is awful.
Right, how do you think I feel? Right. But hey, you know, it was. And the cutest kid ever. You know, you ever once in a while you find a kid on this trip, you run into somebody, it's like so cute, it hurts.
Yeah. All right.
So I was fishing off
of blonde hair. No, just running over the place.
I was fishing off a pier in Lake Bemidji. My wife and daughter were walking around together, and I finally figured out I was standing on a dock, and it was sunny out, and I'm casting away from the dock. Nothing. A little perch would follow in. And then I thought, well, maybe if it's hot out, they're under the dock. And sure enough, as I cast parallel to the edges of the dock and just sort of let it sink, every time it sunk, out popped a huge rock bass, minimum of 8 inches. The biggest was a foot long, thick and fighting and fun. And I'm catching them. I mean, I must have caught 10 of them.
Really?
All that size. And there's this little kid there. He's 6 years old. And he came. He's just standing there. He's just amazed. And I said, he goes, what kind of fish? I said, it's a rock bass. And he goes, can I touch it? Sure, I held it up and he touched it. He goes, it's all slimy. And if you move your fingers this direction, it's rough. And if you move them this direction, it's smooth. I'm like, well, those are the scales and the whole thing. And the parents are standing there watching the whole thing. And he goes, catch another one.
All right.
And I said, okay, I'll try. And then I do, like, on cue.
Yeah.
And it comes and goes, how does it know where it lives?
What?
I'm like, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, when you put it back, how does it know where it lives? And I said, I think they just kind of know. They just instinctively, they go to where they're comfortable. Catch another one. So I catch another one. And he says, when you put it back, is it going to get eaten by a shark?
Oh, absolutely, kid. Yeah, it's going down.
I said, and first, like, is it going to die? And the moment you pull it out of the water, is it dying? Is it going to die? Is it going to die now? Is it dead yet? I said, no, they can be out of water for a while. It's okay. We can take time.
We're all dying.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, that's what I said.
They journey into that thing.
We're just renting these things, kid. And so it goes, are you sure it's not going to get eaten by a shark? How do you know? And I said, well, there are no sharks in this lake.
Those fish are thriving.
but is it going to get eaten? Are you sure? Is it going to die? Where does it live? Does it have a name? It was just question after question after question. I'm so far removed from kids that age,
right?
That it was just like just painfully cute. Just and then
nice that you could pull a fish up on cue.
Well,
that guy too, huh?
Catch another one.
Yep, gotcha. No problem.
Here you go. Here's
this
another.
This happens
one.
All the time,
yeah.
Son.
I'm this good. This always happens with me. I can just you ask me to catch. I can just magically make him appear.
Did you explain the metrics after that of how improbable it was that you caught all those?
No, but I was pretty excited. You don't have a day like that. And it's probably why I didn't catch anything on Lake Namakagan either, because the fishing god said, look, if we're going to give you your best rock bass day ever.
I mean, it's a hot thing, right?
Fishing biting.
They're not biting.
Why didn't you tell me?
You're in the wrong place.
I haven't been biting for 2 weeks.
You need your $75 first. You asked the question, leading into the last break, about whether or not you're satisfied, whether or not this six-game losing streak for the Brewers and the Cubs vaulting themselves into first place is...
That's the question.
Satisfied.
Not necessarily satisfied, but are you pleased enough? Are you not entertained? Are you pleased enough? And I'm talking to you. You know who you are. the most critical Cub fan. And look, I'm high standard guy, right?
Have to be.
I'm always a high standard guy.
Club's told it's got high standards.
Correct. You're in your window. This is your time to have these high standards. So, is this right now? We get these artificial, arbitrary marking points and assessment points. The All-Star break is one of those. 312-644-6767, or you can reach out on Twitter at Bernstein_MCK. You can send us an email if you want to Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com, whatever your preferred modality is. Is this okay? And not necessarily when you, what I'm asking is, you know that those American League teams are really, really good. And here's the thing. Barry Rosner mentioned this as I was driving in. You only have to beat one of them. It doesn't matter how good the American League is. Only one team can come out of there, and you only have to beat that team.
That's absolutely true, but a tough lens to see your club in right now. That's absolutely true, but it's tough to take that part of baseball out as you're approaching a trade deadline where those AL teams, that Yankees club, Red Sox club, if they're going to be the ones to add Manny Machado through prospects or through a person off their 25-man roster, if that Dodger team is going to be that, that's, he's right. And come playoff time, that's a lot easier to understand than it is here at the All-Star break or heading into a trade deadline, where even if you've satisfied some of the askers, some of the high standard Cubs fans, even if you've satisfied some of them over this past weekend or in these last six games, you now have a trade deadline and an AL that's looking to enrich themselves while you're looking to fix question marks that have generated themselves over the course of the first half of the season.
The textures are hilarious here. The 515. That kid came into the conversation an adorable little scamp, and he left it a nihilistic bastard. The 815 says, Dan could have prefaced that story with, I had this conversation with an 815 caller, and I would not have been surprised. And several believe that I was catching the same stupid fish. No, not that dumb.
Never unhooking him and throwing it back in?
Or a fish dumb enough to keep hooking itself.
Right.
No, they were different fish, but they were all huge. And the thing about rock bass, you know, that I've compared them to Jay Cutler before, because you always think it's something more than it is. Because when you get a rock bass, it's like two really hard tugs, and then it kind of says, don't care.
You mentioned like a foot. I mean, so these are big fish.
They're big, but when the first couple tugs, it feels like a smallmouth.
Maybe.
And the difference between a rock bass and a smallmouth is that after two hard pulls, the rock bass is like, yeah, I'm caught.
No.
I don't care. And then they but those first two tugs, like, okay. This is fine. But, you know, for the purposes of that little half an hour of nonstop insanity action, and that little kid, is it going to die? Does it have a name? Is it going to get eaten by a shark? How does it know where it lives? Like, I couldn't answer that. Like, it kind of does, or it doesn't really care.
It just goes.
Yeah. It,
questions about fish from 6-year-olds aside, the question has been asked to you Cubs fans, whether or not you're feeling okay now.
Is this half a season? Is this Cubs performance okay enough?
A good number of answers come in on the text line already. Phone lines open as well, 312-644-6767. And as we answer some of the, or hear from some of the who had questions, there are a number of tidbits over the weekend that have popped up concerning the Major League Baseball trade deadline and some players the Cubs may or may not be attached to, and also that big Manny Machado trade that just hasn't had. Have you noticed, Dan? Still on the Orioles. And there might be a reason or two why that has nothing to do with baseball. We'll get to those next when we come back. Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.